What has become of England? The land of Boadicea, Drake, Marlborough, Wellington. We allow ourselves to be led by timid grey men and dictated to by Basques, Walloons and Flems. We bow to inbred chinless aristocrats just because centuries ago their ancestors stole some sheep or shagged the king or vice versa or both. We're up to our necks in tradition and deference. Well, I intend to sweep all that away. England must arise.
Welcome back to BCFM's Politics Show with Irish Republican and Labour activist Martin Summers and me, Tony Gosling. A very nervous-looking Jeremy Hunt meets Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State. Can anything but war be the result? Pompeo at the State Department, well, his only policy seems to be blaming the rest of the world for US government failings and, like a mad dog, threatening with sanctions or war every country that pursues its own policies. So, it's to be a trade war with China, and a nuclear-powered Nimitz-class carrier strike force is chugging off on the long voyage to the Persian Gulf. We hear some voices too from Tehran tonight, from the university, and from Iran's Foreign Minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, who we never see on the BBC. They're threatening to resume uranium enrichment if the EU resumes sanctions, as the US is trying to force them to. Plus, the US talk show host, shock jock, right-wing Alex Jones interviews Nigel Farage. And Israel, again, bombards the vast concentration camps, as described on this show, known as Gaza. But a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel with Daniela Ganser at the end. How can we reform the United Nations Security Council, particularly to actually enforce its own charter, which bans the sorts of wars of aggression and invasion the United States has been waging for the last 60 years? Our sister show Dialects here on BCFM Tuesday at noon this week. Jack Windle from Bristol Acorn Union supports tenants like Martin Summers here. He chooses the Ragged Trousered Philanthropist as his book of dissent for the Save Redland Library campaign. Former Swiss banker Manfred Petrisch gives us his take on Easter's suspicious terrorist attacks. And Justin Walker from the West Country's British Constitution Group has some controversial views on Extinction Rebellion and climate change. You can listen here at BCFM 93.2 at noon next Tuesday, or download it from dialectradio.co.uk. Right now. But Martin, I think we should probably start with this whole attack on Gaza this week. And it's apparently in response to a whole load of rockets. Do we know what is the point, I suppose, is the obvious question, for the Palestinians to be firing rockets when they know that they're going to get probably a massive bombardment by artillery and airstrikes in response?
Well, I think that's news management, because in actual fact, the Palestinian view is that they came under attack first and they responded. Now, I think that it's always presented as Israel responds to Palestinian attack.
Is there actually any point in the Palestinians responding, knowing that probably ten times more Palestinians will be killed in a response than possibly the Israelis in the first place?
Well, you've got to bear in mind that you haven't got unified command in Gaza, so you've got Hamas and you've also got Islamic Jihad, who are actually not under the control of Hamas, and they do stuff that Hamas don't actually agree with. But actually what happens after these these confrontations is that ceasefires are often agreed. In actual fact, that, you know, it's an ongoing battle. And of course, if there's going to be no peace, then there's going to be war. And if there's going to be war, it can't just be one side doing the shooting. They've been trying to do peaceful demonstrations for months, being shot down by Israeli snipers. And it, frankly, the decision whether they're going to fight back is a one for the Gazans. Nobody. I mean, there was not much point the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto rising up against the Germans. They were never going to win. They were all going to be killed, and that's pretty much what happened. But they've got a right to defend themselves, and the people in Gaza have got a similar right.
Well, thankfully now the truce is holding. Al Jazeera say Israel is lifting restrictions on Gaza fishing. But at the end of the day, this isn't really an equal balance of power, is it? When one does talk about a war or a battle, that isn't really the right word to describe what's happening here. It's more of a massacre.
Well, it is, because one side has got all the weaponry and the other side's got hardly anything. But you've got to remember that the line that divides Gaza from Israel is not an international border. It's simply where the Israeli army ended up in their various incursions into Palestinian territory. And many of the people inside Gaza used to have farms and houses on the other side of the border. So when they shoot missiles at the Israelis who are in their farms and houses, that's their farms and houses that were taken off them. And there's no rules that say the Israelis can have that. It's just the rule of force. And ultimately, of course, if there's going to be a world war, which there well might be, maybe the state of Israel won't exist at the end of a world war, because it's not just Palestinians who are unhappy with them. They're actually cruising for a bruising, as well, no doubt we're going to discuss it, with various other actors in the Middle East and elsewhere.
Well, it's interesting to see that the spokesman for the Israeli government was a chap called Michael Freeman. This is one of the things the Israelis managed to do, which I think is actually a kind of propaganda ploy, really. He's actually a Brit. It sounds like he's brought up and he's English, which I suppose for anyone watching the news would make them think, well, actually, he's one of us, he's on our side, etc. He's not got an Israeli accent. It doesn't look like he was brought up there at all.
Well, I don't know who this guy is, but as you well know, there are plenty of people of Israeli origin living in Britain, and why not, and so on. It's an international world. But
well, this is the other way around. I mean, well, anyway, let's have a listen to what he had to say.
Okay, let's
on
see what
Channel
4
News this week, speaking to Jackie Long.
Michael Freeman from the Israeli embassy in London is with me now. Mr. Freeman, the death toll is rising. I assume you regret the deaths on both sides.
Absolutely. The death of any innocent is a terrible tragedy. And Hamas bears full responsibility, along with Islamic Jihad, for this round where they have launched hundreds of rockets at Israeli civilian populations.
I mean, that's an argument that you make, and you make it every time there is an incident like this. The question is always whether the response from the Israelis has been proportionate. And we heard there the Israeli Prime Minister has ordered the military to continue its massive strikes. And that can only mean a rising death toll.
Well, this is up to Hamas to try and stop this. You know, if Hamas and Islamic Jihad were to stop the rockets now, that would be the end. Hamas are targeting Israeli civilians. They've fired over 600 rockets. And we have currently over 2.5 million Israelis in bomb shelters, and we are acting as any country would act to defend its population.
I mean, there is a grim familiarity to these incidents, isn't there? They're often followed by mediation, we know, through the Egyptians and the UN. But fundamentally, nothing seems to change over the crucial issue of the blockade, which I think you would concede causes enormous suffering, but also builds resentment. Even in self-interest, isn't there an argument for easing the blockade?
Well, we need to remember where what you call the blockade came from. In 2005, Israel withdrew from Gaza, withdrew all of our settlers, all of our soldiers, all of our civilians, everybody withdrew. And there was no blockade. Everything was completely open. And what happened was Hamas started firing rockets and started launching attacks at Israel. And in response, like any other country, Israel said, we're not going to allow you to bring in rockets and missiles. You know, every day, hundreds of trucks go into Gaza. They bring in food and medicine and everything that the population needs. So the question really is...
But that is not true. People are...
Martin, this is an interesting... what he's saying here is effectively that the Hamas and the Palestinians have abused the trust that was given them in 2005.
Well, I don't agree with that. Basically, the blockade is on things like medicines and food. It's a medieval siege, effectively. And and as you pointed out earlier, the amount of weaponry that the Palestinians have actually got is pitiful. And you could argue that it's a waste of time. Nobody's been killed by any of these rockets. Let's just point that out.
Actually, it looks like one Israeli was killed and 19 Palestinians this time.
All right, so it's 19-1. But of course, you've got to remember that Gaza, as I said earlier, the border between Gaza and Israel is not an international border. It's just where the Israeli army ended up in their campaign of conquest. The state of Israel was recognised in 1948 in very clear borders, nowhere near what is currently
Gaza. But the Israelis
Gaza.
Will see this as a kill ratio of 20-1 and a victory.
Well, the problem is for the Palestinians, they're on hiding to nothing because nobody takes them seriously. And of course, when similar things were being done by Serbia in Kosovo and in Bosnia, we went to war with Serbia. The British RAF bombed Serbia for 73 days. We killed 10,000 civilians. 10,000 Serbian civilians were killed. But you know what? They released Kosovo and they packed back down in Bosnia. Maybe that's the only language the Israelis understand. If they had 10,000 civilian casualties from a British airstrike and a US airstrike, then perhaps they'd withdraw into the borders in 1948 that they agreed that they would accept. Because that's everything they've taken since 1948 has been taken by force.
Okay, back now to Michael Freeman from the Israeli, or is the Israeli spokesman, and Jackie Long at Channel 4 News.
Are hungry. People are starving. There is an economic wound in Gaza that needs to be healed, doesn't there?
Absolutely. And that responsibility lies squarely with Hamas. If Hamas were to stop firing rockets, if Hamas were to stop investing, you know, they get billions of dollars in aid every single year. And rather than taking that aid and investing it in schools or hospitals or food, they build terror tunnels, they build missiles, and they fire them at Israel. You know, if they wanted
to... There is an argument made by many analysts that Hamas fire rockets because it is the only way that they can get the Israelis to even remember that there are people living in real difficulty in the Gaza Strip.
Well, we know there are people living in difficulty in the Gaza Strip. We wouldn't deny that. But we would say that.
But isn't there an argument for easing their difficulty, which might lessen the tensions?
Only recently we changed the guidelines for allowing Palestinian fishermen to have more area to fish in. We allowed greater access through the border. We allowed more people to come into
Israel. And that's all part of these ceasefire negotiations,
isn't it? These are all part of the ceasefire negotiations.
But the International Crisis Group suggests that Israel is defaulting on promises to ease the blockade perhaps even further. And their argument is that Hamas used rocket fire as a means of putting pressure on you. So it is in your own self-interest.
Well, let's hear what Hamas say. Let's not listen to what other people say. Hamas are very open. They say that their aim is to destroy Israel. Their aim is to wipe Israel off the map. And their aim is to kill every single Jew around the world. So for them, the rockets aren't about putting pressure. Because, again, if this was about pressure, you know, as you know, Gaza has a border with Egypt. And the border with Egypt has also been closed.
Right.
And they've never fired a single rocket into Gaza, into Egypt. Not one. So the issue is
Michael,
clearly not about the
Freeman,
border.
I'll have to...
Well, isn't that interesting? On one level, the Israelis say that nobody's to talk to Hamas. Hamas won the last democratic election in Palestine in 96, I think it was, and therefore they are, in theory, the democratic government. Of course, they keep pushing that that we've got to have democracy in the whole of the Arab world, including armed uprisings against Gaddafi and all the rest of it. But Hamas, who were the elected leadership, the Israelis won't talk to them, and they won't recognise them. There's anybody who talks to them Britain won't talk to them for the same reasons. Then, of course, in actual practice, they do talk to them, just like the British talked to the IRA for years and years and years behind the scenes whilst pretending they weren't talking to them. Ultimately, the question is, does the state of Israel, all that stuff, they want to kill every Israeli and get rid of the state of Israel. Hamas have said, if you do a deal with us, like recognising a Palestinian state, then, but in reciprocation, we might recognise a rump Israeli state. But it's got to be within the borders that were agreed in 1948, and that means that everybody who's living outside Gaza, the Israelis that built all their homes and farms and factories just on the land that people in Gaza used to own, they will have to withdraw into the borders of 1948. Serbia had to withdraw from Kosovo. Israel's got to withdraw from Palestine. It's as simple as that. There's one rule. The rules have got to be absolutely the same. And we went to war. I said earlier, we went to war with Serbia and had a 73-day bombing campaign. Never mind a few rockets. We bombed their television station. Do you remember? We knocked the television station out and killed all their weather girls.
Martin, it's actually worse than what you just said. Hamas don't want to kill all Israelis. They want to kill all Jews around the world, according to the Israeli government spokesman.
Well, that's just rubbish, isn't it? And just shows how what bad faith they talk.
Jackie Long should really call him out on comments like that, because surely that's not any kind of official Hamas policy. That's just an Israeli version.
Well, why hasn't you got a Hamas spokesperson on at the same time as she's got the Israeli spokesperson on? You could ask that as well, couldn't you?
Yes.
Don't they have an opinion? Shouldn't we hear it?
You certainly could. Anyway, where do you think this particular conflict is heading here? Because it's not looking as if the Israelis are going to be, relaxing the controls that they have, the blockade on Gaza, anytime soon. Serious problems with access to water and things like that.
Well, it's quite possible that they're intending a final solution to all of this, because Hassan Nasrallah in Lebanon gave a speech last week where he said, well, we're expecting the Israelis to attack in Lebanon. There's also possibly going to be an attack on Iran, and in the middle of all of that, they then will try and push all the Gazans into Egypt. That's probably what they'll do.
There's also a big appeal,
but of course they're not necessarily going to win,
from
this bigger
some
war.
Israeli artists, as well as all artists in Gaza, saying boycott Eurovision.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the way to have a non-violent resolution of this is everybody puts on sanctions. We've got sanctions on Russia, we've got sanctions on China now, tariffs and all the rest of it. There's sanctions on sanctions on Venezuela. What about sanctions on Israel? Because Israel basically is an artificial state. If it didn't have massive public subventions from US taxpayers and others, it would be a failed state. And of course they have a real problem. Many people, Jews around the world, don't want to go and live in Israel because they can see that it's a bit of a mess.
So
and they'd rather not go. Then the Palestinians outnumber the Israelis. So if we had a one-state solution, and that's possible, then of course the Israelis would have to accept that,
Martin,
they were the majority of the Palestinian
this
state.
This week in The Guardian, Ian Black has been suggesting Britain needs to recognise Palestine as an independent state.
Well, that's right. I think Jeremy Corbyn already said that that's what we should do, and other countries like Ireland have already taken that step. But of course the Israelis don't want that, because they don't want a Palestinian state. They've pretty much made it clear they don't want one, and in that case we then move away from having a two-state solution and we have a one-state solution. But of course the Israeli state, the rump Israeli state, to my mind, has got to be where they agreed to be in 1948. Just as the Serbs can't control Kosovo, they can't control Palestine, and the rules have got to be exactly the same for everybody, everywhere. And if one state like Israel completely flouts international law like that, it basically sets a precedent for everybody else to flout international law.
They're not flouting international law, they're reacting to rockets fired by Hamas.
No, they shouldn't be on that border in the first place. Yeah? And don't forget, if the Germans had invaded Britain in World War II, we'd have fired a few rockets at them. Of course we would.
Mike Pompeo, US Secretary of State, who's also a Christian Zionist, was in London this week chatting to Jeremy Hunt. And I must admit, I did have a little tiny little smile across my face as I heard Jeremy Hunt, because he sounds incredibly nervous, as if he might actually be a victim of imposter syndrome, being a little bit out of his depth. But anyway, here he is at the Foreign Office with the US Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, our very own Jeremy Hunt, Foreign Secretary this week.
Today, the Prime Minister and I have had excellent discussions with Secretary Pompeo on a range of global challenges, including China and the situations in Yemen and Iran. Let me focus on two of those. First, Iran. The UK and US work incredibly closely on Iran, including to counter Iran's destabilizing activity in the Middle East. Whilst we both agree that Iran must never be able to acquire a nuclear weapon, it's no secret that we have a different approach on how best to achieve that. The UK has continued to support the nuclear deal, which is a key achievement of the global non-proliferation architecture, because we believe it's in our shared security interests. But today's announcement from Tehran about its commitments under the deal is an unwelcome step. I urge Iran not to take further escalatory steps and to stand by its commitments. Sanctions were lifted in exchange for restrictions on Iran's nuclear program. Should Iran cease to observe its nuclear commitments, there would, of course, be consequences. For as long as Iran keeps its commitments, then so too will the United Kingdom.
Thank you, Foreign Secretary Hunt. This is my first trip to the United Kingdom as Secretary of State, but Jeremy and I have met many times at many different places in the world, and we talk frequently by phone. You've truly become a great friend, and I know that you're a great partner to our collective desire to keep our two countries safe. It was my privilege to meet with you and with Prime Minister May. President Trump is very much looking forward to his visit here next month and commemorating D-Day with our great allies. It was evident in my conversations both with Jeremy and with Prime Minister May that the special relationship doesn't simply endure. It's thriving, despite what you might read in the papers. And we're ready to meet new challenges and face them together and seize on new opportunities together as well. Brexit has obviously been a hot topic here. I reiterated to the Prime Minister as well as to Foreign Secretary Hunt that it's the United Kingdom's sovereign and democratic choice on how it will proceed, but also that no matter what happens, the United States will continue our strong relationship with both the United Kingdom and the EU. Our great hope is that Brexit can be resolved soon because President Trump is eager to strike a bilateral trade agreement that expands on our number one trade relationship. I've had the privilege as both CIA director and now as Secretary of State to observe how the UK has been amongst our most reliable partners on a broad range of security issues. We are grateful for your support of our diplomacy and pressure against North Korea, your eagerness to contribute to the strength of the NATO alliance, and your leadership to resolve crises in Syria and in Yemen. The United Kingdom also has contributed mightily to the coalition to defeat ISIS. And as the attacks in Sri Lanka showed, we need to keep up that fight against radical Islamic terrorism. A key part of that fight is that every coalition member must take back terrorist fighters captured on the battlefield.
Martin, this is a little bit cheeky of him talking about D-Day and everything, because we know this week we've had the anniversary of VE Day, and this is the end of the Second World War in Europe, which actually the Russians won. 27 million Russians died defeating Hitler. Would you like to have a stab and a guess at how many British died and how many Americans died in the Second World War, soldiers?
Less than a million.
In total, between the two of them, around about each the US and the British military casualties in World War II were both around 400,000 compared to the 27 million Russians. And yet,
more people were killed in bombing. Thing, that's just soldiers.
I was looking. Yeah, this is soldiers, of course. But I was looking at the BBC's coverage this week, and rather than have any sort of interest in the Russian parades going on in Moscow to celebrate the end of the Great Patriotic War, and their victory, and the 27 million Russian soldiers died.
Wasn't said for soldiers, 27 million people. They lost millions of soldiers, but that's a lot of. They lost lots of civilian casualties as well.
Okay. So, yes, okay. I can just double check that. Is the actual number PQR for Russia? The Soviet Union. Okay, sorry. Soviet Union, 8.6 million.
That's the soldiers.
Yeah. Soldiers died, and so anyway, so the point here being that the BBC put out a piece about Stalin and how he's actually not really so popular in Russia, and he shouldn't be popular in Russia now. But actually, of course, Stalin was in charge of that, wasn't he? He was running show over in Russia at the time.
Well, I mean, what's going on is, you know, Pompeo is lining Britain up for all of their adventures around the world. He didn't mention Russia there, but the British have been slavishly following the US line on Russia, and in fact possibly driving a more hostile line than the Americans themselves
want. Let me just clear up the numbers of figures of military casualties. Roughly 400,000 British died in World War II military. Roughly 400,000 American military personnel died.
That was
roughly 10 million Russian personnel, military personnel, died in World War II.
Yeah, well, also, of course, they lost 17 million civilians because they were invaded, unlike Britain or the United States. In fact, the United States didn't suffer any civilian casualties at all, to speak of.
What about all the other things Mike Pompeo is saying there? Fascinating, talking about, you know, stopping Iran's nuclear ambitions. Well, of course, Israel has, we know, at least 200 nuclear weapons.
Indeed. And, of course, the Iranians have. There was a deal. The Iranians basically haven't got nuclear weapons, as far as I can tell, and they don't particularly want them. But they don't want them not to have. Jeremy Hunt's being disingenuous there. The Americans want regime change in Tehran. They're not interested in doing deals with the Iranians. They made that absolutely clear. They're not interested in doing deals about nuclear weapons or anything. They just want regime change.
The Obama
regime, as revenge for the revolution.
The Obama regime did want to have some sort of a deal. Obviously, Trump and Pompeo have thrown all that out. But actually, Iran is not America's enemy. Surely, it's Israel's enemy.
Well, because the Israelis have a stranglehold on US policy, that makes them America's enemy. Does it make it our enemy? That's what I'd say to Jeremy Hunt and Theresa May. The Israelis have made their position absolutely clear, and the Americans are making their position absolutely clear. They want to go to war with Iran this year. I would suggest that that's not the view of the ordinary people of Britain. We don't want a war with Iran, but the Conservative government is going to drag us into one. And if they do, we're going to eat them alive.
Or the ordinary people of the United States, either.
Well, the ordinary people of the United States are far more bamboozled by propaganda than we are. Most of them probably don't want a war, but many of them are rather ignorant. And, of course, the wars within the United States always happen somewhere else. Iran's much closer to us than that, and Iraq is much closer to us than the United States. There's the Atlantic Ocean in the way that prevents them from getting the blowback. But we're getting the blowback from all our previous interventions now, aren't we?
Jeremy Hunt there talked about Iran doing escalating tensions over the JCPOA. Surely this isn't really Iran. This is a reaction to the Americans and Trump pulling out of the nuclear agreement.
Yes, I mean, basically they're acting like complete bullies. I don't think the Iranians are very sensible to say, well, if nobody's going to restart our nuclear program, because they don't need a nuclear program.
What they've said is, okay, let's just be absolutely clear. We will hear a bit more about this in a minute, what they're actually going to do, which is what they've said is, if you allow the U.S. to bully and bamboozle you into having EU sanctions on Iran, we will just have to tear the agreement up.
Well, so, yes, if there's no agreement, there's no agreement.
We haven't torn the agreement up with you. We've torn it up with the Americans have torn it up with us. So that if you don't stand up to the Americans and continue normal trade relations with Iran, we won't tear it up.
Well, in that case, there's no deal, then they're under no obligation. Well, don't forget the Iranians have signed the non-proliferation treaty.
Why are the EU not standing up to the Americans and saying, well, we will deal with Iran if we want to?
They've basically said that, but the Americans have said, no, if you do that, we are going to put sanctions on your companies. The companies have basically turned back to the governments and said, oh, we do quite a lot of business in America. We can't afford to annoy them. So in other words, the Americans, the great free marketeers, are saying, you can't do business with Iran, you can't do business with China. And if anybody, the Chinese, of course, buy a lot of their oil from Iran, and they're being told that they can't buy Iranian oil, otherwise there'll be further sanctions, blah and blah. Now, in actual fact, the Americans are basically behaving like complete bullies on the world stage. It's going to be interesting to see how far they get with all of this, because they're basically annoying everybody, but everybody is scared of them for obvious reasons, because they can hurt you. Well, they're big bullies, they've got nuclear weapons, they've got all sorts of ways to hurt you.
Jeremy Hunt certainly did sound a little bit nervous there, I have to say. Now, anyway, also, Mike Pompeo has been very critical of the Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn, particularly over Venezuela.
You said, for example, Jeremy Corbyn's position on Venezuela is disgusting. I mean, that's a strong word to use.
It's disgusting. I repeat that. Look, this is a supporting an individual, Maduro, who has for years systemically looted Venezuela and caused women to not be able to feed their babies and to provide medical care for their children. The medicine sits on their very border. The food sits on their very border. The European Union and American taxpayers were incredibly gracious.
There just shouldn't be outside interference in Venezuela.
Yes, well, providing food to starving children isn't interference. It's support. It's what we do. It's in our deepest traditions of humanitarian assistance. The interference has taken place. The Cubans are there. They've interfered. So I hope Mr. Corbyn will ask the Cubans to cease their interference in Venezuela.
You've also just said that you believe anti-Zionism is the same as anti-Semitism. Now, there are many on the left who dispute that, who say that you can have reservations about Israel and particularly the behavior of the Israeli government and not be anti-Semitic.
Critiquing the policies of the government of Israel is completely in bounds. Calling for the destruction of Israel, seeking actions that will lead to its destruction, that's not acceptable. This is what I mean. It's not anti-Zionism to critique an Israeli policy set. It is anti-Zionism to take positions which ultimately undermine the democracy that exists there in Israel and the human rights of those Israeli
people.
Sounds
as if you were worried that the two are getting blurred.
They are, and we need to make sure that we're crystal clear about that.
Well, I think that's absolutely outrageous, really. There's been a blockade on Venezuela since Chavez came to power years ago. But the British have actually, the Venezuelans said, can we have $1.5 billion of our gold back in the Bank of England? The Bank of England said, no, you can't have it. And there's been a report recently that showed that 40,000 Venezuelans have died because of the sanctions placed on them by the West and by the Americans in the last 2 years alone. And the poorest Venezuelans are the ones who are suffering the most, and they are the ones who support the Maduro regime. The people who want him out are the posh people from the posh suburbs of Caracas.
It's the Maduro government.
The Maduro government. Okay, let's call it the government then. And of course, Jeremy Hunt there lining up against Jeremy Corbyn and this guy Guaido that they're trying to impose on the Venezuelans. Most Venezuelans didn't know who he was when the Americans proclaimed him president of Venezuela. 80% of Venezuelans responded, well, who is he? Never heard of him. Now, in actual fact, Jeremy Corbyn's been a bit too mealy-mouthed about this. The attempt to overthrow the government of Venezuela by sanctions and by using violence, lots of people have been killed. When people shoot police officers, if we went around shooting Israeli police officers, if Palestinians went around shooting Israeli police officers, that'd be called terrorism. When it's done inside Venezuela, it's part of the uprising of the people against the socialist dictatorship of Chavez, which has actually created loads and loads of positive features for the poorest Venezuelans, providing health care, and education, things that they never had before Chavez came to power.
Back in the 1940s, Israelis were shooting British policemen.
Well, indeed, they were, weren't they? So then that's not terrorism either, of course, because you're creating a state of Israel, and the people say that the state of Israel shouldn't exist. The state of Israel was, as I said earlier, was recognised in certain boundaries in 1948. Certainly didn't include the Golan Heights, certainly didn't include Jerusalem, certainly didn't include the land contiguous to Gaza. Now, when the Serbs, as I said earlier, when the Serbs tried to aggress others in Yugoslavia, when I was an aid worker, we went to war with them. That's what we should be talking about doing with the Israelis.
Mike Pompeo's got some pretty strong views on these Iranian nukes as well. That's what he's worried about, development of nuclear weapons over in Iran. He's very worried.
We need real IAEA inspections. We have to have IAEA inspections of military sites. This reluctance to offend the Iranians and come up with a conclusion of noncompliance, this has to stop. I might add that when word of the Israelis acquiring the nuclear archive documents got around in early 2018, the Iranians started to empty out this warehouse in Tehran. Now, the IAEA was informed of this by the Israelis, and as I said, they didn't bother to inspect it until April of 2019. And I imagine a lot of the evidence was gone by then. This is just unacceptable. We have to have serious inspections. I'd like to see any place, anytime inspections in Iran. There were Obama officials talked about that. I know the Iranians aren't crazy about that. But look, the Iranians have to win the confidence of the world after repeatedly violating their nuclear obligations over decades.
Well, the IAEA have said that they've not, they've basically stuck to the deal 100%. So Pompeo's just talking complete nonsense there. The Iranians have satisfied the IAEA that they've fulfilled all the conditions that were placed on them. Now, of course, if they're going to rip the deal up, then there's no deal. And of course, when are the Israelis going to allow random inspections by Russians, for example, to see whether they've got any nuclear weapons? They're not supposed to have any at all. And under the Logan Act in the US, any country that develops nuclear weapons without permission has to have sanctions on it. Sanctions on Israel for having nuclear weapons. And of course, the only reason the Iranians would want nuclear weapons is because the Israelis have got them. So if you want to stop the Iranians having nuclear weapons, denuclearise Israel.
Anyway, from time to time, the BBC do a fantastic job on Iran, and they did this week. I think it was on Wednesday morning on World Update. There was one of the professors from Tehran University they had on to explain to the world and to us, for a change, you never see this on the TV at all, exactly what the Iranians, why the Iranians have decided that they may be resuming uranium enrichment. And so let's have a listen to that in full now.
How concrete is the threat that Iran
it's the BBC's
will increase
Dan Damon
its uranium enrichment program? I put that question to Sayed Mohammed Marandi from the University of Tehran.
The Iranians are very serious, especially because the United States has been gradually pulling out of the nuclear deal for 2 years now. And last year, they pulled out completely. And ever since then, European countries have, despite their positive language, but in reality they have been complying by Trump's demands. And the Iranians are saying that this cannot continue. We cannot have a one-sided deal where the Iranians abide by all their commitments and the other side abides by none.
The problem is the Europeans are in a bind because the global banking system on which they and everyone relies is controlled through the United States. And so any transaction that any European country wants to do is blocked if they do deals with Iran.
Well, the Iranians don't accept that argument. The Europeans have more than enough leverage to stop the United States from bullying them. And collectively with the Russians and the Chinese, they can make sure that the Americans do not interfere in their commitment to the nuclear deal. If the Europeans cannot protect their citizens, if they cannot protect their businesses, if they cannot protect their interests and their banks, then they really shouldn't be at any negotiating table. But in any case, if the Europeans don't begin implementing the nuclear deal, the Iranians will gradually have to move in a different direction. This cannot continue a one-sided deal where the Americans try to strangle the Iranian economy, where the Americans try to make ordinary Iranians suffer, where they try to prevent Iran from using banks, exporting oil, importing medicine, and also block Iran's peaceful nuclear program. This simply cannot continue. So it's for the Europeans to decide if they're going to be a part of the solution or if they're going to be a part of the problem.
And how concerned is the Iranian government that the rhetoric from the United States and indeed the deployment of a carrier strike group, including B-52 bombers, suggests that there is at least part of the U.S. administration that would like to attack Iran or at least severely restrict their operations around the Middle East?
I mean, let me be blunt. Iran does not want war. But if the Americans know quite well that if there is war, the closure of the Strait of Hormuz will be a sideshow. All oil and gas installations in the Persian Gulf will be destroyed. The Americans will be driven out of Iraq and Afghanistan. This will have implications that are beyond anything that I'd like to think about. It would change, it would create a global economic catastrophe, a severe global depression, and the Americans will be to blame. So I think the Iranians are calculating that sane people in the U.S. government, in the military, and in the CIA will be able to contain the likes of Bolton and Pompeo. But at the end of the day, it's up to the United States. The Iranians do not want conflict, but the Persian Gulf region is not a region where the Americans can keep the oil flowing and bomb Iran at the same time. It will just not happen.
But the U.S. says that it's Iran's actions in Yemen, stirring up trouble with Hezbollah in Lebanon against Israel. Even the recent rocket attacks by Hamas are laid by some Americans at the feet of the Iranians, and then stirring up trouble in Baghdad or increasing their influence in Iraq. That is the reason for the ratcheting up of the tension, isn't it?
Iraq has a democratically elected government that wants very good relations with Iran. You can't blame Iran for that. In Syria, it's now well documented the support that the United States and Saudi Arabia, among others, gave to Al-Qaeda and ISIS, the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency document of 2012, among many other documents. It's quite clear that these countries were supporting extremists, and if it wasn't for Iran, we would have black flags flying over Damascus and Baghdad today. In Yemen, it's the U.S. that's carrying out starvation with the Saudis. And in Gaza, the people are under siege for years. I don't think that the United States can blame Iran for the crimes that it is committing in this region.
Said Mohammed Marandi from the University of Tehran.
Well, isn't that a bit of fresh air to hear the Iranian point of view being put? And how ridiculous to hear Jeremy Hunt basically going along with all of this nonsense from Pompeo. Basically, there's a real danger that there's going to be a Middle East war because of the intransigence of the Israelis and the Americans, and Britain is implicated empowering these bullies.
The US carrier Stripe Group is now within 2,000 kilometres of Iran. We hear today, Martin, it's just been gone through CENTCOM carrier group has just gone through the Suez Canal.
Yes, and the Egyptians have allowed them through. I suppose they've got to allow them through, but then, of course, they're then responsible for the consequences. And they're going to get into the Persian Gulf. I think the idea of sending an aircraft carrier into the Persian Gulf is absolutely bonkers. They should have sent, I was thinking about this when I read this the other day, they should have sent it the other way round to come through the Indian Ocean so that they can fly attacks on Iran from the Indian Ocean, Diego Garcia, somewhere like that. Basically, an aircraft carrier in the Persian Gulf is just going to get sunk in the first 10 minutes of the battle, and everybody on it is going to be drowned.
So this is something called the USS Abraham Lincoln-led strike group. There's also deploying 52 strategic bombers. Oh, sorry, no, no B-52.
And they've been sent to Qatar, which is very interesting because the Qataris do not want a war with Iran. The Iranians and the Qataris actually made up when the Saudis were blockading Qatar, and therefore they're having these. They don't want these bombers there, and of course that could lead to a situation where they're attacked on the ground.
The US ambassador to Russia, John Huntsman, has called the deployment a 100,000-ton message to Russia.
To Russia? Well, I'll tell you what's going to happen if there's a war in the Middle East, in the Persian Gulf. The Russians are going to stand back and watch the Iranians basically destroy the US. They haven't got a military... They've got no military sense at all. You attack a country like Iran, the Persian Gulf is a death trap. It's an absolute death trap. All military personnel, including British military personnel, are going to be in this base in Bahrain. They're never going to come out of there alive. They're all going to die.
There's a whole load of, I suppose, headlines around this as well. Top US officials, Martin, are meeting on a possible attack on Iran today. US officials continue to falsely accuse Iran of planning an attack. And Iran is calling for strengthening the nuclear deal. In the EU is rejecting their ultimatum. The US commander says he could send the carrier into the Strait of Hormuz.
And what will happen to it? It'll get sunk. It'll just get sunk. They'll fire missiles at it from the land. They're not going to fight an air-sea battle with them. They're just going to sink their aircraft carrier with everybody on board.
In the meantime, Putin has been doing something quite interesting I see this week, and this has happened very quickly, just over the last 2 months or so. And I do wonder, actually, whether the Russians play quite a clever PR game. This is about the Russia creating its own internet. And mm-hmm. It seems to me that these things get developed, they get announced, and very quickly, actually, they are ready and rolled out and ready to happen, rather than the years and years it seems to take our leaders to actually get anything to happen. So we heard I think it's in February, Russia must build its own internet in case of foreign disruption from Putin. And this week they've announced it's ready to go. They've got their own internet. So in other words, that the various indexes which are used to control whereabouts you can, whether you can find websites or not on the internet, which are controlled by the US at the moment, are now that Russia's got their own version of this.
Well, basically, the leadership in Iran and the leadership in China would not be doing their job if they weren't preparing for war with the United States and the United Kingdom. And we, like fools, are marching towards this Armageddon. But of course, those who lead us into it, and we're definitely going to lose if we start a war with these people. Well, I don't see that the Russians and the Chinese will directly involve in a fight between the Iranians and the West. They'll sit back and watch the Iranians do the dirty work. Well, and then they will
actually
wait to intervene when it's over.
Quite close to home, isn't it? Because on the nationalinterest.org blog in the US, we had a former Labour councillor from Stroud on a few weeks ago, talking about the B-52 bombers at Fairford.
Yeah.
And we now know that what they were practicing was a nuclear strike on Moscow. The US Air Force in early March 2019 deployed 5 B-52 bombers from Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana to Fairford in the United Kingdom. Some of the 8 engine long-range planes threw mock nuclear attacks on Russian soil.
From Gloucestershire, but of course the Russians have made their position absolutely clear. Any nuclear attack on us will lead to an overwhelming response, which will wipe you out. They're not playing the game of we're going to use little nukes. They're actually planning to use nuclear weapons on Iran, little ones. Yeah. Minor ones, and they're hoping that the Russians will then take the view. I think the Russian Putin's already said any use of nuclear weapons will lead to an all-out attack. by us on you. I mean, do you remember we had the Westminster Abbey service for British nuclear weapons? Thank God for Russian nuclear weapons, eh?
If you're an EU citizen living in the UK, you will need to apply to the EU Settlement Scheme. The scheme is fully open and you have plenty of time to apply. It is free and all you need is your passport or ID card and to complete an online form. Support is available if you have any questions. To find out more and to apply, visit gov.uk/EU Settlement Scheme. Irish citizens or those with valid indefinite leave don't need to apply.
Now, you talked about the breath of fresh air from Tehran University. Also, Martin, Mohammad Javad Zarif, he's the Iranian foreign minister, speaks superb English, but we never hear anything from him either, do we?
But I presume we are now.
To my knowledge, and I've dealt with the UN for the last 40 years, this is the first time that this is happening at the UN, that a permanent member of the Security Council is openly calling on other countries to violate a Security Council resolution and threatening them with punishment if they didn't. So I think it's not for Iran to make that decision. It's for the rest of the international community to make a decision whether they want to allow this to happen or whether they want to stop somewhere. Now, we know that the United States is a big economic power. We know that the United States is a huge market. We know that nobody wants to lose the U.S. market. But the American government should understand that people are doing this out of desperation because they have no other choice. This is coercion, pure and simple. Do we want to build international relations on coercion? Do you think it's sustainable? These are important questions for anybody who's interested in long-term peace and stability in the world to ask if coercion is sustainable. As a diplomat who has devoted my life, and I know that you have to, we cannot accept that coercion is sustainable. We cannot accept that coercion should be the rule of the game. We're not idealists. We know that power play is a fact of life in international relations. But power has to be moderated by some sort of rules. Otherwise, we'll be living in a jungle. I do not want to repeat and bring you back to history. We had an empire ruling the world for much longer than the US has ever existed. And it ends. Empires end. We need to know whether we want to establish a modus operandi that would last longer than our empire.
So that was the Iranian Foreign Minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, Martin, really talking about what we were talking about earlier, which is the bullying and coercion going on right now by the US.
Well, Pompeo, when he'd been to Britain, or before he went to Britain, he went to Iraq and said, you've got to stop buying Iranian oil. And they politely told him to get lost. Because, of course, they're Shia. They're a Shia government, Arab Shia. And they are basically quite friendly with the Iranians.
This is all a little bit
similar, though,
isn't it? Why
shouldn't they be? They're their neighbours.
The run-up to the illegal invasion of Iraq with the weapons of mass destruction, with Mike Pompeo calling for inspections of Iran. Also, I mean, it's just there's so much, it seems, that this is... I mean, also, he, as a foreign minister, is a little bit like Iraq's Tariq Aziz, I think he was, who we're hearing very reasonable, sensible and very good English, but we're not actually hearing it anywhere on our mass media here.
No, but I think the Iranians are even in a stronger position because Iran's a much bigger country than Iraq with more people, and they do have a democratic system, unlike our allies in Saudi Arabia, who are raping Yemen as we speak and killing thousands with British missiles and British military personnel involved. Now, what I would say to British military personnel who are involved in any of this, you are a military personnel, and if we go to war, you're a legitimate target. And if I was an Iranian Revolutionary Guard or a Houthi volunteer, I'd be definitely trying to kill you, and I'd be within my rights to do so.
Talking about light at the end of the tunnel, because this is a bit grim, talking about this potential Third World War the US State Department seems to be trying to cook up along with the Israelis over in the Straits of Hormuz in the Persian Gulf, is the fact that Trump, Martin, today has been blaming John Bolton. He's saying that the quagmire that's been created in Venezuela is your fault, Bolton. Of course, they never blame themselves, do they?
Well, what's happened is Bolton promised the, Trump that he'd got the Venezuelan army on side and soon there was going to be a coup. But what it seems has happened is the Venezuelan generals picked up the phones to that they were being approached by the Americans. They went, yes, 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 we're going to change sides. Yes, of course we are. And then when they phoned them up on the morning that they were going to change sides, all their phones were switched off because, in fact, they didn't change sides. They were just playing a game. And, of course, the Venezuelan army is not going to change sides. And if they invade Venezuela, that's going to be like Iraq. They'll get in fine, but the Venezuelan army are preparing for a guerrilla war on the ground inside Venezuela if the Americans are foolish enough to come and fight them. Also, some
good news. Chelsea Manning's been released from jail, just as Julian Assange has been locked up, bizarrely.
Has she been released?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that was news to me. I thought they were putting loads of pressure on her to try and put pressure on Assange, but that's a bit of good news if she has been released.
And also we were here now from... We heard from Daniela Ganser last week, the Swiss academic from Basel University and historian, written a lot about secret warfare and secret armies. And in the second part, we're going to listen now to his thoughts about reform of the United Nations and why it's not working right now.
And I think as a human family today, you know, we should think of whether we want World War III or whether we don't want it. You know, everybody has to decide for themselves, because the future is nothing which is now fixed or which, you know, is determined. This is something which depends on all of us, and it depends on what we want. And from many, many conversations that I had with many, many people in many, many countries, I can tell you as a fact that most people want peace. They don't want war. So it's something like we should be able to do it. If many, many people want it, I'm saying 90%, okay? I'm saying 90% of global population in all countries across all classes want peace. Because they don't want to see their kids shot. They don't want to walk on a landmine. They don't want to live in a house which is being bombed. Okay, they just don't want it. So we have an overwhelming, really overwhelming will for peace. At the same time, we see that United Nations don't really work. And what can we do right now? I think the best that we can do is to have a strong Secretary General. That'd be something very good. Kofi Annan, for instance, was a rather strong Secretary General. Ban Ki-moon was not very strong. And if I think back to Kofi Annan, you know, he came up on television and said that the war against Iraq was illegal. So he's basically the face telling the story, because today you always have a face, okay? The United States is Trump, Russia is Putin, and Germany is Merkel. Obviously, that's not true. I mean, not everybody in Germany looks like Merkel, and not everybody in the US agrees with Trump, or not everybody in Russia agrees with Putin. So, you know, this is a very strong simplification that we do in international politics. But the UN is the General Secretary. And it would be very good, I think, that every time that a war breaks out, for instance, 2011, the war against Libya, or 2001, the war against Afghanistan, or 2003, the war against Iraq, you know, many wars breaking out all the time, that the Secretary General goes in front of a global TV audience and says, let's not forget, ladies and gentlemen, that the UN Charter has declared that all wars are illegal. And so is this war. It is illegal. I call upon all nations to refrain from using military action. I think he could do it. I think he could do it. Unfortunately, he very often doesn't do it. And when he does it, like Kofi Annan, I looked at the data very clearly, he does it rather late, okay? The attack from the British and the Americans on Iraq came in 2003, and Kofi Annan addressed the global media in 2004. So he had like 1 year of delay. I mean, that's a lot of delay. He was right in the substance. He said this war is illegal, and people listened to him. I mean, people are much more inclined to believe what the General Secretary says than what a president or prime minister says. They know, you know, that these people are out for power and money and greed. But they think that the Secretary General represents, in many ways, the hopes for a better future, for more peace, for more justice. And so my suggestion would be that whenever a war breaks out, the Secretary General should step in front of the camera the same day. Okay, the same day. And then you had television stations and newspapers and alternative media reporting the statement from the Secretary General, and he could always say wars are illegal, because that's in the UN Charter. You know, he doesn't need to come up with a new text. Students have asked me, okay, clever idea, why doesn't he do it? And the answer is, he's being given his job not just by the world population, but by the five members of the Security Council. And they are the US, Russia, China, the British, and the French. So if these five attack another country, and just imagine, you know, you're the Secretary General, and you go like, this war is illegal. Then you've just criticized your boss. You're going to be fired. And so this is a dilemma that we have.
That's the Swiss author, historian from Basel University, Daniele Ganser, Martin, making a pretty clear case there, saying that actually, in fact, what he's saying effectively is that a lot of this is a media war. This is a propaganda war, and the UN Secretary General has got to up his game. Antonio Guterres, what's he been up to in the last week? Mm-hmm. Well, he's saying we've got to stop coal-fired power stations.
Yeah, well, the UN obviously is a flawed instrument because the Security Council is split over things like sanctions on Iran. It's quite clear that the Russians and the Chinese aren't happy with that.
But he's missed the point. You've missed the point completely. He's saying that there are rules in the UN, and the Secretary General should be more bold about saying, no, you can't have illegal wars.
Yeah, but
he should be on the TV straight away.
Yes, but he said at the end, if he did that, he'd be sacked straight away.
Well, maybe he would, but then at least he would have made an attempt.
Kofi Annan, as a former UN head, said the war on Iraq was illegal. It was illegal.
A year after the event. This is what his point is, a very good point, I think, which is really talking about the 80% of military spending which goes on psychological warfare. The UN have got to catch up.
Well, they have, but of course...
Anyway, time to sign off for the US-owned Comcast News at 8 now. Thanks to our guest in the first hour, that was Kai Dudd, and thanks to Martin Summers there. You'll find this show's podcast, story links, comment page at thisweekoneword.org.uk. I'm on Twitter at Tony Gosling. Here's wishing you a relaxing and enjoyable BCFM weekend. Dialect here on Tuesday at noon, but do please join us for the politics show at 6 o'clock next week. God bless, and don't let the banksters get you down.
Live from the Sky News Centre.